Hello, I'm Simon, and welcome back to the Bookster podcast from inside the SaaS holiday rental software company Bookster, based in Edinburgh, Scotland. Follow along as Bookster discuss their journey and their inner workings. Thank you again for joining us, and we hope you find these conversations insightful and ultimately helpful. Now, I'm joined today, as always, by CEO and co-founder of Bookster, Robin Morris. Robin, thanks for joining me again.
Hello.
And we're lucky that, again, we're joined by support lead Adam Aaron from Bookster. Adam, thanks for giving us some more time.
No problem.
I think we're in sort of episode two of our mini-series sort of journey exploring the four pillars of Bookster. Last time we talked about the low barrier to entry. This week we're going to explore how Bookster supports and helps clients use the software. So I think we're going to dive into a bit of that this week. So if you're ready, gents, I think the first thing we should probably talk about is onboarding of new clients. Now, you onboard clients on a one-to-one basis. I guess, Adam, that sort of falls into your realm. What sort of time do you spend with a new client doing the sort of onboarding process?
So initially, I mean, I suppose last episode we discussed low barrier to entry, and one of those would be self-sign-up. So when a customer signs up, they'll get a series of messages from us that will give them some self-guidance in the initial instance, and try and get them as far along the process of almost self-onboarding as possible. So things like setting up a payment gateway, these are all things they can technically do themselves. If they have done them, it makes the onboarding process generally smoother. Not everyone does them. You will get clients that don't that haven't activated their subscription before they've onboarded. So that's sort of the first thing you do. Get them to pay for Bookster, essentially, because onboarding is part of the service, but obviously the service is paid for. So,
and I suppose this is interesting to other SaaS companies. If you're sort of running a SaaS company, so when someone registers or signs up, we send out these emails, as Adam says, trying to get people along the process or give them advice or tips. And most people just they're quite simple and easy to read, but you know, good chunk of people just don't read that kind of thing. So by the time they come to book in with Adam,
you touch on something, Robin, that a good chunk of people can read, they don't read, and I think that's, I mean, you've got to cover all sorts of things in support, but most of our support is going to be email based, which is written, but there's a certain amount you've got to assume people are just glancing at it and looking for the bit of information they want and ignoring the rest. So there's a definite knack to getting that, and you will almost change your tact with people as you get to know them as well. The messages will become shorter and shorter. You know, there's certain processes will be one word answers, and you don't even bother signing them off anymore because you're that sort of terms with your customers. But in terms of a new customer, getting them to the place where they're onboarding, generally we want them in a certain place. It's not always possible. The messages I've referred to, try and get them in that place. If not, then the general process would be getting them as far as you can within the time allotted, but it may be a question of doing a follow-up meeting as well.
And I mean, how in terms of your clients generally, how long do you spend on an onboard session with somebody?
A session I would always want to keep to an hour or less if possible. It's not always possible, and depending on their enthusiasm and the types of questions they're answering, sometimes they do go on longer. Sometimes if they do go on too long, I will cut it short and just say, look, let's meet again. I'm not expecting you to have taken in everything, you know, I've told you today, because people just don't pay attention after a while. And there's a certain amount of that comes with the territory, I suppose. But they will generally, you know, you'll get a feel from it usually within the first minute or two of, you know, what kind of onboarding it's going to be.
Right, sure. I mean, do you produce sort of video manuals for them at all and things they can refer to themselves, or is it just purely your sort of one-to-one?
So we in the first instance, we try to make the software as intuitive as possible. So, you know, good software as a goal, and I'm not saying this is always, you know, is always possible or achieved, but as a goal, certainly you want to make something self-explanatory, and, you know, in a perfect world, my job wouldn't exist. It's not a perfect world, and yeah, we're not a perfect company by any means. You know, we everybody is, what? Has got imperfections. Yeah, sorry to break it to you, Robin. In terms of, you know, yeah, is that always done? No, it's not always possible to do that. So, you know, of course I'm on hand to answer questions. Video manuals tend not to do. The main reason is software changes, and if you've got a video, it's not going to be relevant for very long, and there's a lot of effort goes into producing something, editing something, etc., that is out of date pretty much as soon as it's done. For things like where it's concepts that aren't going to change, I suppose a video would work. But even that, I would say things like, you know, you'd want like animation or something to, you know, to express what you're doing. That's all a lot of production for what I would consider not that much payoff, because just like people don't read, they also don't watch. And sometimes the best thing to do is just have a quick conversation with someone. Do we get asked the same question over and over? Sometimes. By the same person, I mean, yeah, sometimes. Is that something we could improve on? Probably. But I think the general approach has been, we work, I don't know if it's been gone through yet, but, you know, as far as being agile, we work in an agile way. So it's very much like a constantly evolving thing. I mean, I almost think of ourselves, you know, as an organic thing, and that includes our clients as well. And we're, you know, as we change, as they change, as the industry, you know, changes, we're all moving along with that. And I think from a support perspective, that has to be the approach as well, is it does have to, you know, change. And the quickest way to do that is usually a conversation with someone.
Yeah, I mean, a conversation is, you know, it addresses tone, you get quick feedback, you understand what their problem really is. They may have worded the problem in such a way that it's easy to misunderstand what they're actually asking. So, yeah, having a quick phone call or, you know, in an onboarding session, there's a lot of backwards and forwards. That it's much, much easier to address those questions. There's also a lot of, I think, because we're a B2B company, there's a real tendency to start using acronyms. And we, you know, without us knowing that we're doing that, we'll start using them, like saying OTA, for example. That's online travel agency, which refers to...
Oh, I've been pronouncing it OTA.
Oh, man. which is like... you know, booking.com or Airbnb, etc. They're OTAs, or I don't know, like even a payment gateway or iCal. There's all these terms that we use that for us, we know exactly what they mean, we know what they are, but someone who's just letting out their holiday home or, you know, starting a business with a chalet or something, they don't necessarily know what these are. And so the onboarding process, a lot of it is, or some of it is just making sure that, you know, we're starting to speak the same language together as well.
So when does, you know, when, I don't, what do you, if you can sum it up in a couple of minutes, I guess, what do you cover in onboarding, and when does onboarding become just general support? I mean, what is the line?
So, I mean, the onboardings, we actually started them out. We noticed that people were signing up to Bookstar, getting bookings, and their settings were incorrect for how they were running their business. So in other words, they were using the default settings. In other words, they had not looked at the settings at all. And settings preferences are they're sort of the same thing. So inside the software, there's a section where you're basically configuring it to your needs. So things like an initial payment versus a minimum payment, versus when the balance is due for a booking. All of those things are defined in settings, and they all affect each other. And this just wasn't being, for some reason, looked at. I suppose from a geeky point of view, I consider myself quite nerdy in terms of software. That's the first thing I would look at. But from a holiday rental company, maybe they wouldn't. So the onboarding, its first goal was to go through the settings. So that's generally still what I do. I will start with the preferences, ask them some questions about how they're running their business, where they're getting their bookings from. That will indicate to me whether we need to connect to the OTAs, as Robin mentioned earlier. Whether they need to define their currency. Are they in Europe? Are they in America? Et cetera, et cetera. All of those things need to be set before you're getting bookings in, essentially. So the onboardings originally were to just go through the settings. As we've done it for the past several years, it's developed into a more, I wouldn't say concrete process, because it is quite fluid, because it very much is based on the individual that we're doing it for, or company. It depends as well. How comfortable are they using software in general? Sometimes the onboarding, the first 15 minutes is, how do I get the camera working? Which is not
much like this podcast. To be fair,
it's the way the world is, I suppose. But
I was looking at your light shade for most of the start of this, Adam. Too.
I'm just as guilty of it as the people I support. But how do you get in contact with us? Obviously they're talking, to me. It's like, do you know how to reach support? Making sure that they're aware of all the different ways they can get support. In general though, the longer you go on, the less attention they're going to pay to you. So you need to get the most important things, from our experience, I don't want a customer to get bookings in at the wrong price. I don't want them to get double bookings. I don't want them to be, I suppose that covers the wrong price, as I say, getting bookings at, just wildly different than what they're expecting. So you need to find out what their expectations are, the way they're generally working, and it's a lot of thinking on your feet, but as a general rule, you're going. It's not a script as such. You're just going from the top to the bottom through the settings. If you cover that quickly, depending on their confidence level, you can then move on to optimizing their properties, how they approach their pricing, and advise how Bookstar can accommodate that.
You mentioned expectation sort of setting there. I think that's quite important. So we used to find that we had quite a high number of people who would come along. They would use Bookstar for 2 or 3 months, and then they would disappear again. And you know, they'd cancel or whatever, and we would manage to get in touch with them and ask them, well, why did you cancel? And it was usually because their expectations of what Bookstore was or what it is was different to what how they'd set themselves up to use it. So they might be like, oh, we didn't get any bookings. It's like, right, well, you didn't actually connect to any channels. So you didn't connect yourself to Airbnb, you didn't connect to booking.com. So Bookstore isn't somewhere that if you just register for it and set a property up, that you will get bookings. That isn't how it works. Basically, it's not what, you know, it's only if you advertise through those channels that you're likely to get bookings or, you know, promote yourself. So and also setting other expectations, like, you know, what our pricing can do, you know, how you can set your rates up, how, when they will get money from us, when they'll get money from, you know, an OTA. So that expectation setting is quite important, I think, as part of the onboarding process. So they understand what it is we're providing to them and what we're not, I suppose, also.
And I guess, I mean, part of the ongoing relationship is that you would follow up after the onboarding is finished, I guess, to make sure these things are happening.
Yes, I mean, we've got a process, you know, in place that, you know, we regularly follow up, you know, with each client. And I mean, the idea is, yeah, to keep an open line of communication. If you don't communicate with us, we will communicate with you. You can ignore that, and that's, you know, fine too. As long as you're happy with the software and you're getting along fine, we don't mind. But what we do tend to find is that, well, if, you know, if we catch any sort of issue that they're having, and it might not even be with us, it might just be something we can help with or advise on, then that's a good thing. So yeah, we've definitely found that's been helpful.
And we've mentioned a couple of times about the size of the business. I mean, you don't have a huge amount of staff. So, I mean, how do you cope with the sort of support and onboarding, et cetera? What sort of size of team do you put towards these things?
So as a support lead, I suppose, it's my responsibility to sort of oversee that. But I'd say everyone chips in to a degree, you know, with support anyway. You know, we're Monday to Friday sort of thing. We do have lives outside of Bookstore. But there's a certain amount of sort of expectation in this day and age that everything will be instant. And I think there is, again, managing expectations. You know, if it's an emergency, obviously we'll take care of it straight away. If it can wait till Monday and it's, you know, submitted on Saturday, then that's okay too. And as long as there's that communication there, that's what the client's expecting. In terms of how do we manage it, I'd say kind of ad hoc. We just kind of keep on top of it. I don't really know. It just happens.
I mean, we do.
I should have a better answer for that.
for someone who knows literally nothing about, you know, at Bookstore. So we do have a ticketing system. We use something called Zendesk, and that so allows us to open a ticket. Someone sends us an email, a support issue or something. Everyone can see it in the team, can see how people are responding to it. It can be passed around to different people in the team. So that's pretty structured. So ad hoc's probably not the way to describe that. But
I guess when I meant ad hoc, I meant sort of getting through. I mean, it goes into a queue.
Yeah.
And we try to prioritize, and, you know, there's automation there to a certain degree of, you know, of how it's prioritized. So we are using technology in some respects to help manage that.
I suppose the other thing that's quite
important
is any response is a good response, and I mean, like, any personalized proper from a human response is a good response.
Yeah, sometimes even I am looking into this, is well, I don't know the answer, but I will find out for you. Is better than ignoring it for 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
I think especially in this day and age when everyone, like you say, Rob, when everything is sort of instant, just to have something back is reassuring, I guess, if nothing else. Okay, so good. I mean, look, we're sort of at 20 minutes already. This has flown past this week. I mean, I guess maybe a last final question would be sort of from your point of view, are there sort of certain types of clients that are easier to deal with and support than others? I mean, is there a type of accommodation provider that you find works better?
Well, I would say the best type of support request is when you get a message shortly followed by a "never mind, I've sorted this." is usually great. But in terms of, it's not so much a type of client in terms of the client. It's more a personality thing, I think. I think you can have clients that are small and they're great to work with. You maybe not going to make as much money with them because of the size of their business, versus massive agencies that are equally nice to work with based on the personality of the people working with them. So I think there's very much a human element is the answer to that question, really. We'll work with you, big or small. We don't mind. We're here to help. But in terms of pleasure to work with, I would say it's very much personality based.
It's almost also, we do have clients that never contact us, and never, we reach out to them, we try to speak to them, and they really would rather not speak to us. But they're not, in a way, the nicest one. It almost makes you feel a bit nervous about, are we doing something wrong? So it's quite nice every so often to someone just to say, I'm just checking in and I've got a wee question about this or a wee question about that, rather than radio silence the entire time, which is weird because you would think someone who literally never speaks to you might be quite, that's the easiest form of support. But I don't know. Adam might have a different thought on that.
Yeah, and I know exactly. I think those are almost two different questions there. I'm going to stick with personality, but I think Robin has a very good point that you do want a certain amount of communication, even to know that things are all right, even if it's just a friendly, no problem. I know how to get in touch, and I will if I need to.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's probably across any working industry at all. Your point, Robin, is if you only hear from your boss when things are in trouble, then you're worried every time you hear from your boss. But if you've got that constant sort of ongoing relationship, it makes things a lot easier. Great. Well, look, I think we probably are going to wrap this week up. Thank you again both for your time. It's been another interesting podcast. Next week we'll look at pillar number 3. On your four pillars journey. We'll come to that though next week. If you have any questions on what we've spoken about today, as always, please send your emails to podcast@booksterhq.com and we will get round to answering those questions on future episodes. We've also got our sister podcast, Smashing Your Holiday Rental Goals. That's out in the world as well. So we'll link to that in the show notes below if you'd like to listen to that, and if you'd like to leave a favorable review for this podcast and for that podcast, that would be very gratefully received. Right, again, gents, thanks for your time. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and for everyone watching and listening, we'll see you all again very soon. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye
for now.